All right, Parshas Emor.
I've got a little crazy story. So by the Mir Yeshiva, there is a yeshiva called Shvil. Shvil, Z-H-V-I-L-L. There's also the Shvil Rebbe, right. So there's also a hall that's on the other side of the mirror, if you go a little bit down Shmuel and Avi. So there's another little place that's called the Shvil Hall. They have a big area around there. So the Rebbe of Shvil, the original Rebbe of Shvil, was Reb Shlomo. Reb Shlomo Shvil, he lived in Yerushalayim. He was well known for his pu'ulos, the different things that he used to do in the mikvah. He used to be in the mikvah, and when somebody would ask him a shayla, he would dip himself under and then come up and he would tell people what to do. Supposedly, they said he was an unbelievable tzaddik, unbelievable gadol. But there were certain things that he just did that were just nobody else understood. So here's the story. There was a Jew who was working in a factory in Haifa. This was before the Jewish state, when the British mandate still was in charge of Eretz Yisrael. And in Haifa, at the time, there was a lot of fights between Arabs and Jews. And there were Arabs and Jews that were going to work in this same factory. The problem was that the British mandate didn't want to get involved in anything, meaning the police kept saying to themselves, you know, I don't want to get into this altercation. They didn't want to do anything. They knew the Arabs weren't going to listen to them. The Jews had their own mind and everything. So whenever something happened, so the British just sort of stayed to the side. So an Arab went up to a Jew in the middle of the factory one time and he said to him, you better not show up tomorrow. If you show up tomorrow, you're going to leave here in a coffin. You show up to work tomorrow, you're going to leave her in a coffin. So, you know, the Jew didn't know what to do. This had happened before, and the Jews that had shown up, you know, the next day or whatever it was, were beaten up by the Arabs, so he didn't know what to do. So he went straight to the police. But the police said exactly what he thought they were going to say. The police said, like, what do you want to do? You know, I'm not going to do anything. The Arab's not going to listen to me. So forget it. I can't do anything about it. I'm sorry, but I can't do anything. The guy instead decided to travel to Yerushalayim. Now, it seems that he went the next day. So maybe he didn't go to work the next day, but it didn't say in the story. The story didn't explain this. But it seems that he went the next day, and he went to the Shvil Rebbe. Now, what would you think the Shvil Rebbe would say? You think that he would ask, you know, how big is the Arab? You know, what kind of factory do you work in? This and that and the other. Like, those types of things, details on the case before we get involved. Here's the four questions he asked him. Are you Shomer Shabbos? Do you keep mitzvos? Do you keep taras and mishpacha? Hilchos nida and things like that. And then he said, do you keep hilchos kashrus? Do you keep kosher? Those are the four questions that he asked him. When he responded yes to all the four questions, then the Rebbe of Shvil said to him, then you don't have to worry. There's nothing to worry about. You can go to work the next day. So he went to work. Seems like it was the day after that day that the Arab said, you better not go to work tomorrow. So he went the day afterward, it seems. And the Arab, as soon as he saw him, as soon as he saw the Jew, he yelled at him and he said to him, you think I didn't mean it? You think I didn't mean it when I told you I don't want you to come in? So he went up to him and he punched him as hard as he could in the face. The Jew fell back a little bit with a huge punch. And when he looked back, the Arab was lying dead on the ground. Lying dead on the ground. Very, very strange story, but supposedly this is the way that the Shvil Rebbe always acted. And the way he did it was very, in a secretive way. Now, here's the pshat that wanted to come out from this story. The Shvil Rebbe did not look any different from any other chassid. Of course, he had the payas, and he had a certain look, and whatever it was, but he looked like any other chassid when you looked at him. The Kohanim are given a special azhara in this week's parsha. And it's something that we can take to heart. It's an azhara that's repeated for Bnei Yisrael elsewhere, but here it's a special azhara just for them. It says, Lo yikruhu korcha baroshim. They cannot make a bald spot on their heads. Upa'at zekanam lo yigalechu. They cannot shave their peis. Ubivsa, or their zokin, their beards. Ubivsa lo yisru sarafis. They can't scratch themselves in the skin. Now here's the halacha. What people used to do when somebody would die is they used to do these scratches. They used to scratch themselves. The non-Jews, I guess you could call it the priests, used to scratch themselves. They used to make themselves all bald. They made themselves look disgusting. And the reason why they did it was simple. They wanted people to see the tsar that they had for the person who had passed away. They wanted other people to see it, for them to see, wow, we have such pain, we're under such pain, and everything like that. Now, here's the pshat why the Kohanim has to be specified, Kohanim of Klal Yisrael, to be specified, you cannot do this. Because by other nations in the world, the Kohanim, the priests, are not any different on the inside than the rest of the people. They're the exact same thing. the exact same thing. You can't tell the difference if you would see him in the street or someone else in the street. They'd act the same way. They'd talk the same way. They'd be the same way. So what they did was they had to make themselves look strange. They either wore different clothing or they did something strange to their bodies so that they would act or look different. They tore their hair. They cut their bodies. They would do certain things so that everybody would look at them and say, that is a priest. That would be a priest. Rabbi Yonasan Eichstadt says that's why all the Buddha idols, any idol that comes from, I guess, from Buddhists, they're all bald and they have no hair. Because they specifically, although it was very hard to shave back then, a lot of people just went around with beards, even the non-Jews went around with beards, the priests specifically shaved their heads and their beards, or at least the Buddhist priests, would shave their heads and their beards to make them look clear and circular so that they would be different from every other person out there. That nobody would be the same, everybody would be the exact same thing. That's what ended up happening. It was very, very different from everybody else. That's why the idols are made the exact same way. So the Buddha idols would look like what those priests looked like, so they would look different. Our Kohanim, on the other hand, are required to be Kedoshim Yu Leloheim. Whether they do it or they don't do it, they're required to be holy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not allowed to act like everybody else. They have to have extra halachos, extra laws that apply dafka to them that don't apply to anybody else. So, for example, they can't marry a grusha. A Kohen Gadol can't even marry an almana. They can't be metame lamitim except for the seven, and a Kohen Gadol can't be metame for anybody. They have halachos that apply. They can't marry a zona, or whatever that is, or a halala. There are problems with a Kohen marrying any of these people. They have extra bits of halachos aside from all the avodah that they do and everything else that they do. They have to be holier. Not on the outside, although the clothing that they wear is done in the base of Mikdash because there's a specific requirement for clothing there, but they have to be different on the inside. They must be different from every single other person that you can imagine, that you can think of. They have to be different and act different and be completely different. That's a huge difference between the way we go, the way we roll, and the way they roll. It's a complete difference between them. It just seems different. It's acting different. And that's the reason why we have this whole parsha and specific halachos that even though you say, well, we talk about this. We know that regular Jews are not allowed to shave their beard. Why would you think the Kohanim would be different? We know that you're not allowed to do korcha on your head or yisrus saratis. We know that the halacha mentioned elsewhere. Why do we need to mention over here? It's pashit. Because Kohanim acted like they were different. Kohanim, on the other side, act like they're different. Here you think maybe they should act different as well. Maybe the Kohanim should make themselves look different. So when you look in the street, you would say, oh, that's a Kohen. That guy must be a Kohen. To that we say, no. Kohanim should look the same, but act differently. Act differently and act holier.
But what about all Jews in general? We should all act holier. We should all...
different from other people, but there's still more laws and more holiness. They have an extra din of Vikidashto, of Kedoshim Yu Leloheim, of all the different issues that, listen, there's also an inyan of Kedusha by Klal Yisrael. They're supposed to be a step higher, that they are supposed to be Tahor to be able to eat Truma. They're the ones who are supposed to go to the mikvah every single day in order to make sure that they're Tahor at all times and they're not Tami and they don't have anything wrong with them. That's the idea. That doesn't, a Jew could do that and take upon himself that Kedusha. He's not required like a Kohen is, Bikidasho, to absolutely be Kadosh. So here we have a line. It says, Amor al Kohanim b'nei Aaron v'al Marta alayim. Say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, L'nefesh lo yitama b'amav, I don't want you to become Tamei for any people that are there. Amor v'al Marta, says the Gemara. Rashi says, brings it down. Amor v'al Marta l'hazer gedolim al ketanim. To warn the older ones on the ketanim. I had a word over here, just stop. I always thought that the pshat was like this. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen was never made a Kohen until much later on. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen was only made a Kohen when he actually stabbed Zimri. The reason why is because the only Kohanim that were made Kohanim was Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Itamar. Those are the only five Kohanim. Any children that were born before that point, but were not included in those five, are not Kohanim. They don't have the status of Kohanim, they have the status of Levim. Any children born after that to Elazar and Itamar have the status of Kohanim. They have the status of Kohanim, but nobody else has the status of Kohanim. So Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen had to do a Maisa that was killing Cusbi and Zimri in order to deserve to be a Kohen. That was the Bris Kunas Olam that was given over to Pinchas, because until that point he wasn't there. But just because he's not a Kohen, he can't serve in the Beis Mikdash, doesn't mean he doesn't have these halachos. He still can't marry a Grusha. He still cannot marry a Chalala or a Zona.
he still cannot be metame lemes. He has the chumras of Kohanim, but he doesn't have anything else. The chumras of Kohanim, the only issue that he had was that he couldn't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. But he had the status of a Suffolk Kohen, I guess you could call it, of someone who was somewhat there, but not fully there. And because of that, because there was such a stuff, and because there was such an issue, because that issue was there was such a problem with Pinchas, but no loss of an Aaron HaKohen with doing anything. So Lahazir Gedolim, you got to warn the Gedolim, which is Aaron, Nadav, Aviyu, Elazar, and Yitamar, Al HaKetanim. With the Ketanim, which is Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, and anybody else who might have been young at the time, who might have been a lower factor, somebody who was on a lower level, who was considered a Ketan at the time, who still had the Azharas, but didn't have all the Avodah, who didn't have anything else. So here's the Pshat according to Rav Shor. He says, Rav Shor says, Lahaz here is the Lashon of Zohar. It's a Lashon of shining on to the next person. This is an awesome Vort. The Gedolim that we're referring to over here are those that have found the Derech HaEmes, the true path, the right way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ketanim are those who have fallen into Taiva and don't have that right path and sometimes falter when it comes to doing mitzvahs. Because they sit there and they say, listen, what can I do? So the Gedolim are the Tzaddikim Gemurim in the world, those that we strive to be, that we want to be, like the Tzaddikim Gemurim that nobody can say anything bad about. The Ketanim are people that are normal. I guess you can call them normal. The people that have sinned, the people that can do, but they can't do exactly. That's the Gedolim and the Ketanim. Says Rav Shor, the Pshat is, every person has a chiyuv to be mekarev the Ketanim. Every person has a chiyuv. Somebody on whatever level you're on to be able to go up to the Ketanim and to say to them, we have to help you. Because they're just blinded. They can't do it. But there's odds. Yes, you have to do it, but nefesh lo yitama ba'amav. You can't be metami yourself while doing so. You can't knock yourself down. It's very hard. I mean, being on a college campus and not be affected by everything that's out there, to allow yourself to see everything that's out there and not be affected by it, it's nearly impossible. What are you going to do? It's going to be almost impossible for a person who's grown up in a yeshiva, let's say, to automatically just go into a college and just go around and just say, like, okay, I'll look at that person, but I can't look at that person, or that person, or anything like that. It's very, very hard for him to do. You have to be a special person to be able to do that. Lahazir Gedolim Alektanim, the line that he says is that you can't lose the Kedusha that you've gained, but you have to have the Gedolim go after the Ketanim. So if you can't do it yourself, if you can't inspire or show that flame or do anything to somebody else, then you have a requirement to pay for someone that does. Or you have a requirement to make sure there's someone else that does. You find someone who does have the ability to do that, I don't know if he's blind or whatever it is, and you tell him, you take over instead. You do this. And you push him and you tell him, you have to do it. There's no one else who can do it like you. Because you have a chiyuv of helping out those ketanim. And that's where we're getting from Emor v'amarta. Emor, say out the laws v'amarta and tell them, this is what you have to do. Require them to be able to go ahead and do something. That's your chiyuv. And that's why everybody, anyone who's in this room and anybody who's just out there who has the ability to be able to affect other people in any way, shape, or form, it doesn't make a difference what you keep and what you don't keep. If you have the ability to affect one person, that's a Hazar Gedolim Alektanim. That's Emor Bamarta. That's exactly what we're trying to do. That's exactly what we're telling you to do. Go out and inspire someone. Someone who is not on the same level as you. Help them out. Bring them up to a certain level and bring them up. But be extremely careful, because there's no way you're not going to be a little bit affected by it. Be very careful when you go out there and make sure that you're not there. The Lenel Shabbat takes a more practical aspect on this and brings it a little bit more lamaisa. He says, with parents and kids, this was an unbelievable, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, he says this out and it was just, it's a great word. You have to tell your kids to do mitzvahs. That's 100% true. But there's one thing to tell them to do mitzvahs, and another thing to show them how to do mitzvahs. If you go up to your kid and you say to him, you got to get up for shacharis the next morning. You got to get up for shacharis. I need you to put on tefillin tomorrow morning. Okay, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. But he's not going to learn anything, and he might not do it on his own when you're not telling him. We're not doing anything. But if you get up every morning and you show your child, this is what it means to put on tefillin. You get up and you're happy. You say, I can't wait to go to davening. I can't wait to go learn. I can't wait to do this. And you show your child that you want to do it, then your kid automatically knows that it's something special. Then he'll see something. It's going to be something that he wants to take on for his own. That's why throughout the entire Torah, you always see, you got to do Avodah, you got to do the Torah with Simcha. You got to do it with Simcha. What is this? Yeah, there's the Nanach idea, but there's got to be something a lot simpler. What does it mean to do mitzvahs with Simcha? Why is it so important to do it while being happy? And why we have to sometimes give in a little bit and say, okay, don't do that if it's going to make you so upset. What does that mean? Well, how can you give in if somebody's going to be upset? Because the pshat is, mitzvos are there for not just us, but for the future doros as well. And there are times where we have to say, where we have to look, and we have to say to yourself, what are you doing? What are the future doros seeing you do? If there's a kid, and this is a psak from Yaakov Kamenetsky, if a person has a choice of learning outside the house or learning at home, and he will learn at home the same way he'll learn outside the house. It's the exact same type of learning, exact same, whatever he can do inside the house. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky Paskin, he has to learn at home. He said his children see him going to the study learning Gemara. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, even Paskin, you should probably have a window there. So that people can watch you learn. So that the kids can watch you learn. So that when they pass by, they say, Daddy's learning. And when you leave the house, you say out loud, I'm going to learn now. I'm going to daven Shacharis now. I'm going to daven Mincha or Maariv now. I'm going to learn. I'm doing something. And not only just tell them that, you say it in such a happy voice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mezakeh me that I can go learn, that I can go ahead and daven, that I can do something. The kid has to be inspired. And if you think about it yourself, if you think about something that you're weak in, that you feel you yourself are weak in, it's probably because you didn't see your father do that b'simcha. Probably because you haven't seen that. Because if you did see it b'simcha, that you yourself would want to do it. Want to do it. Want as an erupt zone to the point where it's not just dumb, you're going to like let it be. You're going to mamish want to do it. But you have to do a bavot. You have to do an avoda with that simcha. Reb Moshe Feinstein said the famous line in all this. He said that there were two parents that he lived among in New York. And these two sets of parents, both of them, he said, they were both losing their job every Friday. It was still at the time when those people in America that, you know, every Friday they were given a pink slip if they weren't going to come in on Shabbos. They were fired right there on the spot. And these two people, these two parents, every single week they would work from Sunday until Friday, then they'd be fired. They'd have to look for a new job on Sunday. They'd have to keep going. One of the families, all the kids remained from. They all remained Orthodox, Shomer Shabbos, different levels of Orthodoxy, but they all remained Shomer Shabbos. The other family, all the kids went off. All the kids became conservative, reform, non-affiliated. Nobody remained Shomer Shabbos. Moshe said, what's the pshat? What's the difference between the two? He said, it was pashut. Every week, one father would go home. He would come home after he got his pink slip, after he got fired. He would go home and he would tell his children, let's dance. Let's dance. I'm able to keep Shabbos in America. I'm able to keep Shabbos. Yeah, it's hard, but I'm able to keep Shabbos in America. This is the greatest thing in the world. Like, Kadosh Baruch Hu has given me in Europe, where I was, it was so easy to keep Shabbos. Here it's hard, and it's a real challenge, and it's very hard for me to go ahead and keep Shabbos. I'm able to do it. And he took hands with his kids, and he danced around the room to show them how much he said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, how much I admire the mitzvot of Kadosh Baruch Hu. The other person sat there, and he said, came home, and he showed the pink slip. He sat down. He gave a kvetch. I said, oh, how hard it is to be a Jew. How hard it is to be a Jew and to have to keep Shabbos. The kids heard that. It's hard to keep Shabbos, so why bother? What's the point? If it's so hard to keep Shabbos, then why should we do it? I didn't grow up like you seeing your father do it in Europe. I'm watching you, Dad. And you, Dad, hate Shabbos. That's what it looks like. That's what made those kids go off. Because when a person does something and shows that he loves it, then he loves it. If he doesn't show it, if he doesn't do that, that's the pshat. That's why you have to warn the gedolim ala katanim. You got to warn the gedolim. Lazar, our gedolim ala katanim. Watch out for those kids. Look out for what you're doing. You got to be careful. You know, Shlomo Zalman Rovach never allowed a kid to be mechallel Shabbos for you. You had lights off. You wanted to turn them back on. So, you know, you take up a little 2-year-old or 3-year-old and, you know, just say, come on, honey, just turn on the light. We just need the light on. And you just get him to turn on the light. He would never allow it. He said, absolutely not. Even though it's a kid, 2 years old, 3 years old, because Reb Shlomo Zalman Rovach said, what, that's chinuch? A 2-year-old turning on the light for you? That's chinuch? The kid is going to grow up thinking, oh, it's Machalel Shabbos. You don't know what affected him in his brain. You have no idea what that Chilul Shabbos might have done for him. Ah, but he's only 3 years old. He's not going to remember. He's not going to know. It's going to affect him, said Reb Shlomo Zalman. So he said, unlike most poskim, you can't ask a kid. You have to ask a non-Jew. You have to ask somebody. If you really need it, for whatever reason, you have to ask a non-Jew. You have to do something like that. It's almost impossible. It's such a different level. Here we go. Here's something that could be a big problem. A big problem that can happen by anybody when a person wants to work on himself and does it. Do you notice throughout the entire Parsha, if you go through the Parsha, it goes through and says the word lo sechalu. Don't profane a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chil Hashem is throughout the Parsha at least 5 times that I noticed. It could be more. Where it says the words, don't make a Chil Hashem. It says it by the Kohanim, it says it right afterward by the Kohen Gadol, it says it afterward by the Levim, it says it by the Mum, it says it later on. every single time. We talk about lo sakalu, don't make a kalu Hashem. How many times do you have to warn me that you don't have to make a kalu Hashem? I understand. I can't make a Kadosh Baruch Hu look bad. I understand what that means. But why do you have to keep going through it? So here's one pshat. By the Korban Todah, Perek Chav Beis, Pasuk Chav Tet, the Pasuk says, V'chizizbehu zevach Todah l'Hashem, when you shecht a Korban Todah to Hashem, l'tzonchem tizbachu, then shecht it for your own right, for whatever you need, for yourself, for your own will, for everything you need, that's what you should do it for. By Yom Ahu Ye'echel, on that day you should eat it, lo sosiru mimenu ad boker, don't leave it over until morning, ani Hashem. I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ushmarte mitzvotai. Keep my mitzvotai. See some something you'll do them. Ani Hashem. Lo sechalu Hashem kodshi v'nikdashi b'sof v'nezo ani Hashem mikadishchem. You won't make a chal Hashem. You'll be mikadish my name. And I am Hashem that is mikadish you. Asher o tzitzichem eretz yisrael. And mozi yisrael eretz yisrael. That's what it goes into. What's the connection between a korban todah and a chal Hashem? So the Sforno has an unbelievable line. I'm going to paraphrase it and sort of give it. The idea is the following. If you give a korban todah and you're thinking a Kadosh Baruch Hu, do it b'shlemus, in perfection. Don't mess it up. If you're going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what He's done for you, and He's done tremendous things for you, everything that you've had is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you're going to do it, make sure that you don't mess it up. Because a Todah, if you're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do it b'shlemus. Do it in the best way possible so that there's not a Chilul Hashem, so that there isn't any problems. He was a very rich man in Europe. This very rich man in Europe was childless for 25 years, Lo Aleinu. 25 years with his wife. And finally, after everything was said and done, he finally was able to have a child. And his wife became pregnant, and finally she gave birth, and the child was a healthy child, and it was a huge miracle. Everybody looked, 25 years! What an unbelievable thing! It was through modern science, everything was able to be there. This man had a 5-story house in a very affluent neighborhood. Very, very rich neighborhood. Somewhere in Europe. Somewhere around there. And he was able to, he had something, there was something tremendous that he was able to have. It's just a huge house. So he said, once he had that child, he said, in order to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu correctly, I want to thank him for the child, I am going to allow children to learn in my house. And he made a yeshiva for kids in his house. I guess you can call it a cheder. For little kids inside his house on the first floor. He donated his entire first floor for a cheder to be able to use. And he took the top 4 floors. And it's a poor man. But top 4 floors he took, the bottom floor he made entirely into a cheder. People heard about that throughout the city. They said, wow, that guy is going to be in charge of this school. We want to send our kids to this cheder. So a ton of people came to sign their kids up for that cheder to try to get their kids to go in because they saw this is going to be a cheder that's going to be successful. So tons of people signed up. They didn't have enough room on the first floor. So the guy decided, you know what? I'll donate my entire house. He wanted to donate his entire house. I'll go buy something different. And he donated his entire house for the cheder, for this school, to allow it to have from whatever grade to whatever grade, that all the kids can learn throughout the house. Now at this point, the neighbors got involved. The neighbors were very affluent neighbors. They had a great neighborhood. They said, listen. You're going to make a school for that, you know, on the first floor with a couple kids coming inside, maybe 25, 30 kids, something like that. You know, we can hear that. We don't have any problem with that. To have those kids come in is not going to be that big of a deal. You know, come into our neighborhood. But to have 200, 300 kids, you know, sitting in that house all day long, the noise level is going to be huge. We're not going to be able to sit in our houses. This is a nice neighborhood, and we want to keep it a nice neighborhood. You have the kids sitting out there. They're going to throw their garbage on the ground. Nobody's going to clean it up. Nobody's going to be in charge of making sure that these things, you know, that these things got taken care of. The house is going to go to rot because the school isn't going to be able to take care of it. And it's going to be loud. It's going to be uncomfortable. There's going to be school buses of children coming by every single day going into our neighborhood. We don't want that. So they told the guy, you know, we don't want you to go ahead and make this. What did the guy do? The guy took him to court. He was a lawyer and tried to force his way in to try to make sure that he would get the right zoning to be able to make sure that he could get a school inside his house. Took them all to court, and all the people, all of a sudden, it became this huge to-do. The entire neighborhood went up against this one rich guy and fought him. Some of them Jewish, some of them not Jewish. And they fought him, and they said, we don't want it. He was saying, no, I'm absolutely having it. And he did everything he could to be able to have the school. I have no idea what ended up happening. I don't know what the judges ruled. I don't know if the school lasted or if it didn't last. The point behind this story is pashut. You want to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Do it b'shlemus. Don't make a Chilul Hashem when you're trying to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't go ahead and make what you think is a pure Korban Todah. What a Korban Todah. And then go ahead and make a Chilul Hashem right afterward? That's not bishlemus. That's not what Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. He wants you to thank him in the right way, in the best possible way. And what are you doing? You're messing it up. You're messing it up. Says this phone, that's why the Korban Torah is put right by Los Chaloshim Kachi, not making a Chaloshim. Because the worst thing that you could do is have your Korban Torah be messed up by a bunch of people who are just sitting there and saying, yeah, I think this is the best thing. I think that is the best thing. When you're making a huge Chaloshim, you got to be so careful not to make that Chaloshim and not to allow that to happen. And that's what's happening this phone. Here we go. I got a couple little stories for you about Sukkos. To go on in this type of subject, the halacha is that on Sukkos, one is supposed to sleep in a sukkah. We know that sometimes, you know, the Ramah says that if it's cold outside, obviously you can potter yourself. If it's raining outside, you don't have to sleep outside. You know, if it's dangerous, takana, then we don't. So the Ramah says in Europe it's very cold. It's still, you know, it's still the beginning of the winter, I guess, and cold in the fall, and it's pretty cold outside. So therefore, it's not comfortable to sleep outside in a sukkah. And our straw, it's warm. You know, so people sleep outside in the sukkah. When I was in our straw, I never had a problem sleeping outside. In America, it's hard. I mean, it's very hard. It's freezing cold outside. I had a skunk walk in on me once. I was inside the sukkah. That was definitely not fun times. Twice. One time I didn't know it was inside there. I went down on top of my bed. Then I saw the white stripe and I screamed like a little girl and ran out. Second time, I was already in there and it walked in underneath like the little part of the door. It squeezed itself in and then looked at me. I looked at it. I screamed again like a little girl and it ran out and I ran out. It was not good times. But that's what ends up happening. It's just there are things like that happen in sukkahs. Here's halacha. If you hold you have to sleep in a sukkah on Sukkos, if you fall asleep on a shtender, you know, like just, you know, you're in the midst of learning whatever it is and you fall asleep on a shtender or something like that, or if you're going on a long drive and you fall asleep during that long drive, that's fine. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. You're fine as it is. You're potter misukkah, and you're, because that's the way, the whole chidrachim. It's like, that's a normal thing to do. If you're driving on the road during the rest of the year, you can fall asleep in the car, and that's fine. It's not like, no, you have to sleep in a bed. That's fine. You can go ahead and do that. That's not a problem whatsoever. Some argue. Some are machmer and say, no, you should always sleep inside a sukkah. Reb Chaim Kanievsky had an interesting mitzvah that happened to him. He lives in Bnei Brak, obviously, and he had a bris in Netanya. Netanya's not that far from Bnei Brak, but it's a nice drive. The bris was on Hoshana Rabbah. So the minhag is to stay up Hoshana Rabbah night. That's what, you know, some people do. You stay up all Hoshana Rabbah night, then you daven Hoshana Rabbah morning, basikin, and then that's it. But this time he had a bris, and he wanted to go to Netanya for that bris. But Rechaim didn't want to go all the way to Netanya for the bris. It's going to be a long ride for what? I mean, what's going to happen? So he's worried, like, what is it going to be? So he said, it's totally on what Revel Yashiv tells me. His father-in-law, Revel Yashiv, he said, it depends on what Revel Yashiv tells me. If Revel Yashiv tells me that I can sleep in the car on the way to Netanya and on the way back, then I'll sleep in the car. Then I'll sleep in the car and I'll be perfectly fine. I'll go to the bris. But if he tells me I can't sleep in the car on the way there or on the way back, then I gotta sleep. I gotta make up my sleep. It's Simchas Torah the next night. Simchas Torah is one day in Eretz Yisrael. I gotta sleep and I can't go to the bris because I'm gonna be too tired for the rest of the day. I'm not gonna be able to sleep in the middle of the day because people come to visit me on all these days. He said, I'm not gonna be able to do it. So they went up to Revel Yashiv. And Revel Yashiv said, in order to go to the bris, it's mutter for you to be able to go and sleep in the car so you can get a little bit of sleep in so you won't feel so tired for Simchas Torah. That's what he told him. So he went in the car ride, and he didn't fall asleep. He stayed up the entire time. So the Talmidim thought, okay, it's not that big of a deal, whatever, we'll sleep on the way back. They went back, he didn't go to sleep. And he was purposely like keeping himself up, like trying to make himself stay up during the whole car ride. So he said to him, Rebbe, we don't get it. You were told that it's mutter. Revel Yashiv said it was mutter. Said Reb Chaim Kanievsky, I got a Yerushalmi for you. Only Reb Chaim will pull out a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is in Yuma, Perek Vav Halacha Dalet. Reb Manna went to visit Reb Chagai on Yom Kippur. And Reb Manna saw that Reb Chagai was very, very sick. And he told Reb Chagai, listen, if you want to drink, you can drink. If you want to have some water on Yom Kippur, you can go ahead and drink. You're sick enough, you can go ahead and drink if you want. So do whatever you want. Reb Manna left, he went to go daven. When he came back, he asked Reb Chagai, so, did you drink? Reb Chagai said, no. So, Rebbe said, why didn't you drink? Reb Chagai said, as soon as you told me there was mutter for me to drink, my Yitzhara went away. My Yitzhara went away and I didn't need to drink anymore. I didn't feel thirsty. As soon as you told me I could, Yitzhara said, forget it, I don't need it. Yitzhara, says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, only exists when it's usser. If something's usser, that's when the Yitzhara comes. But if it's not usser, then forget it. The Medrash Rabba brings down a story about an old man who lived in a city that was divided by a river. And this old man was 80 years old, and the king was told that this old man had never crossed the river to the other side of the city. Never in his life, 80 years, he had never crossed the other side of the river to get to the other side of the city. So the king made a decree. He said if the old guy crosses the river, he immediately will die. He wanted the guy to never cross the river to see if he could do it. That very day that the decree was made, the old man crossed the river. The king called him in. He said, what was this? 80 years he didn't cross the river. All of a sudden you cross the river when I make the decree? What are you, a fool? So the guy said, I never had a taiva. I never had a desire to cross the river. Everything I needed, I had right here. As soon as you ostered it for me, as soon as you told me it was oster, that's when I said I have to cross the river. That's when it was a tremendous taiva and I couldn't stop it. Shimi ben Gera was told by David HaMelech to Shlomo HaMelech. David HaMelech told Shlomo HaMelech, kill Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera did terrible things to me when I was running away from Shlomo HaMelech. So go kill Shimi ben Gera. Make sure Shimi ben Gera is killed. What does Shlomo HaMelech do? Shimi ben Gera. What does Shlomo HaMelech do? Shlomo HaMelech said to Shimi ben Gera, don't leave Yerushalayim. If you leave Yerushalayim, your life is in your own hands. I'm sorry? Yoav ben Tzruya is another one. Yoav ben Tzruya ran to the Mizbeach. Yoav ben Tzruya was another one. There was Shimon ben Gera. Shimon ben Gera was told, don't leave your slime. If you leave your slime, I'm immediately going to kill you. A year later, Shimon ben Gera left your slime. And Shlomo HaMelech told him, why did you leave your slime? Shimon ben Gera didn't have an excuse, so he killed him. Why did he leave? It's Shimon ben Gera. We're not talking about Stam Yid. Shimon ben Gera was the great-great-great-great-grandfather of Mordechai at Tzadik. Shimon ben Gera was known as the Av Beis Din in the times of David HaMelech after Doi Gadol and Achitofel had died. Shimon ben Gera is going to leave Yerushalayim. Why? Because once the Isser is there, and you can't really figure out, why is it Usser? I can't really figure out. That's when the Yetzer Hara comes. Yetzer Hara tells you, it's not so Usser. Don't worry about it. That's when the Yetzer Hara runs in. But if it's Mutter the whole time, you don't feel anything about it. It doesn't bother you. I think that's pshat behind the Mekalel at the end of the Parsha. The Mekalel is the guy, the Megadid, the guy who curses out God. What happened was, Shevet Dun had certain, everybody had their own machnas and everything like that. This Mekalel was the son of Shlomis Bas Divri. Shlomis Bas Divri was from Shevet Dun. So what did he decide? He decided, where should I be? I don't have a place because my father was an Egyptian. My father's a nutrition, I shouldn't be there. So what should I do? So what did Shlomo, what did he do? He said, well, my mother is from Shevet Dun. So let me go to Shevet Dun. So he went and he sat in the camp in the area of Shevet Dun. What did Shevet Dun do? They went up to him and they said, you don't belong here. You shouldn't be in Shevet Dun. But it goes by Lebeis Avosov. He said, I don't get it. My mother's from Shevet Dun, I want to be here. He went to the Beis Din of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you cannot be in Shevet Dun. And he cursed out God. He said, cursed is HaKadosh Baruch Hu made such a law. Made such a law. I don't get it. Why did he just all of a sudden decide, I'm going to live by Shevet Dun? Where was he living up until then? What happened to him up until then? Where was he? This wasn't the first year of the desert. It was almost a year and a half into the desert. A year and a half into it. That's when the Mekalel was killed. What made him decide all of a sudden, I want to go to Shevet Dun? Check out Rashi. When Rashi goes through, he says, Hotzeis Mekalel. It says, he left by Yetze. Mehechan Yotze, where did he go? The second pshat is the following. Tanchuma Omasnisa Omro. Mi Bezino Shomoshe Yotze Mekuyev. Ba Lita Ohalo Besoch Machne Don. He wanted to encamp in Machne Don. Omrulo, Matziv Cholakan, what are you doing over here? Omrulahem. Mi Bezon Ani, I'm from Shevet Don. Omrulo, Ishal Diglo Ba'uso Sobeza Bosom Ksiv. The passing of Bamidbor says that every person has to be under their own camp, under their own flag. You're not in Shevet Don, you don't belong here. That means they already knew Parshas Bamidbor. If they already knew Parshas Bamidbor, that means he heard that every Shevet has to be in their special place. Up until that point, he was wherever. Because there was no official halacha where you had to be. There was no official halacha. But then all of a sudden there was halacha. What was halacha? Every person has to be Lebeis Avosam. Everybody has to be in their own special place. Shevet Reuben is over here. Shevet Yehuda is over here. Shevet Dun is over here. Everyone must be in their special place. Said the Mekalel. You're telling me it's awesome for me to live there? He got up and he said, now I'm going to live there. That's when the Yetzer Hara got a hold of him and said, now I want to do something. And he said, Meidon Anochi. He knew he wasn't from Shevet Dun. He heard Lebeis Avosam. He had just heard that law. He knew what the law was. But when the Yetzer Hara got a hold of him, he couldn't stop himself. He said to himself, I have to do it now. He ran over to Shevet Dun and planted his tent inside there. And that answers another kasha that Rav Shor gets into. And the question is so poshut. Why didn't Dun accept him? Dun was the ma'aseif. He gathered in anyone that didn't have another place. Kolin akasholim akarecha, all the little guys that were right behind. That was Shevet Dun. Shevet Dun, whenever there was a ger, somebody who needed a place to go, you need a place, you didn't know where to go, you went to Shevet Dun. Dun was the person to go to. So why would they kick out the Mekalel? They had all these people in there. They would take in all these gerim and everybody else that needed to go someplace. Where else would the gerim go? Where would they go? They went to Shevet Dan. So why'd they kick him out? Why would they kick out the Makala? What did he do wrong? That's exactly what Shevet Dan wants. It's such an unbelievable pshat. I want to say the wording that I have over here. Shevet Dan would only accept people who know they have no makom and are makir. They recognize their own chisaron, their own failings, and realize they don't belong anywhere else. Then Dan says to them, we still love you. We still want you. They would be ma'asik them in. But those people who claim they're from Shevet Dan and really isn't, if they lie and they say, this is where I belong, but they don't really belong there, Dan refuses to let them in. Then you don't really belong with us. Because the pasuk says, Ish al viglo. Each man should be in their own place. You have to know where you are. You have to know where you're standing. And if you know where you're standing and you realize you don't have a place, we want you. But if you think you belong here, buddy, you don't belong here. You don't belong here. You have to understand, you're not from Shevet Dan. That's what they wanted the person to understand. They sowed behind all the degolim and all those ideas of encamping and putting people in different places. So understanding who you are, what you're doing, how you're supposed to go about it, and understanding what you're supposed to do, what you're supposed to be in this world. That was the idea behind all of that.
That's right.
And not to lie to yourself about it.
That's ironic, because you can't ever really, ever know.
100%, but you can tell from certain things that you do or certain things that you have. And Dave, what were you going to say?
So where was this guy? Where does this guy really belong?
He belonged to the Gerim. Belong with the Gerim. But where did the Gerim belong? The Gerim belonged in Shevet Dan if they knew they were Gerim. But when he said the line, what?
He's not a Ger.
Although he's not a Ger because he comes from the mother's side.
Right.
And he was at Matan, well, it's a question if he was at Matan Torah. The Beno Ephraim says he came after Matan Torah. But he wasn't a full Jew who belonged in Shevet Dan. So therefore, because of that, because he didn't have a father. And he says, Ish al diglo lebeis avosam. So he didn't have a full place to be. So then what happens? There's a special status for such a person. Where does he go? He ends up going to the Maasev to Shevet Dan. But there was no other place for him to go. A person has to understand where they are and what they are. And if you have a kasha, then you ask, where am I supposed to go? And you find out where you're supposed to go, and you go there.
It doesn't belong to Shevet Dan.
No, the line was, Matif Chakan. That's the wording of the Rashi. Matif Chakan, what are you doing over here? Had he answered, I'm a ger. Where else am I going to go? I have nowhere else to go. Please help me. Then Dan would have said, sure, we love you. But once he says, but once he goes along and he says, Mibnei Dan Ani, I'm from the sons of Dan, then you can say to him, he's different. You got to understand.
I like it.
There's a big difference. What do you consider him?
He's not a ger. He's not a ger.
What do you call him?
We know clearly he's not a ger.
What do you call him?
Maybe he didn't have to say I'm a ger. He just had to say, well,
okay, I'm not from any shade. Fine.
Okay.
Okay. Say not that.
From any shade go.
That's not so that's the opposite. That would be with the ger.
He's the only person like that, yeah. I think. Right?
And he has to accept it. That was the idea. There was no other person that we know of. Shlomo Zbazdivi was the only one who supposedly had that, who was together with Yish Mitzri. But that's what we end up saying. The summary is the following. This is what we end up having. Our Kohanim should be different from the inside, not from the outside. That our Kohanim, our priests have to be different because of what they have on the inside. The Zohar of the Gedolim to the Ketanim should be that shine, that ability to be able to know how great and how the greatness that you have to shine it down to the Ketanim in Kiruv or in Chinuch, depending on those two. Which one?
The Zohar, the Ketanim.
The Zohar from, originally it's a Hasidic Zohar from the Sfas Emes, but I brought it down from Ashur and the Aleinu L'Shabeach Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. Number three, when thanking a Kaddish Baruch Hu, don't be Mechal L'Shem Shemayim. Allow your thinking to be a pure L'Shem Shemayim Toda to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and don't allow there to be a Chol Hashem. The Yitzhara comes only when it's Usser, only when there's a problem. That's where the Yitzhara gets involved, and the Pshat behind the Mechalel, and why Dun wouldn't accept him, because he didn't know who he was. He had no idea what he was supposed to do. He had no idea how to find himself, and because of that problem, he couldn't be accepted into Shevet Dan. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.